Hey everyone, this is Sean, voice of Kezvar, and creator of Monsters of Fantasy. I'm letting you know before today's episode that Monsters of Fantasy will be moving to a new release schedule. New episodes will be released at 12 a.m. EST on Mondays. And before listening, I just want to say again, thank you. Welcome to the Monsters of Fantasy. This was written, produced, recorded, and edited by me, Sean McCarter. Monsters of Fantasy is a production in which I will explore the truly horrific side of the fantasy world known as Dungeons & Dragons. There are content warnings in the show notes below.
Episode 16, Erinyes.
This story is taken from Peter Daw regarding his encounter with what he believed was a harpy.
I don't do any of that stuff anymore. I left the pirate lifestyle behind me long ago. But, yeah, I have a few stories from my days on the sea. But I don't have a story about this Erinyes or whatever you said it was. However, I feel compelled to tell you about the time a harpy tried to sink our ship. I was sailing under the name Stinky Pete back then. I was just your standard dock scum. I was 17 at the time and was hopping on any ship that let me come along for experience and coin. Needed someone to clean the decks, cook the soup, hell, fight for treasure. Whatever part of the seaman lifestyle was needed, I sold myself as it. I remember that morning just as well as I remember the attack. The morning I met Captain Silverfang, that is. It was an early autumn morning. The sun had just peaked over the ocean. The wind wasn't anything worse than normal. You just bundled up and dealt with it. The shipyard wasn't empty by any means either. It was filled with crewmen either loading or unloading merchandise. Silks from Rakir, books from O'Malley, fruits from Jebani, and drugs, well, from everywhere. Then there was me. I was just sitting there alongside a few other slums, shouting to the different ships, trying to grab the attention of someone. This wasn't uncommon, and I had a bit of an advantage over the others. At the time, I was young and still had all my limbs attached. I was in the middle of badgering some captain about how well I could keep his ship clean if he let me aboard, when my friend, Cletus, almost broke my neck by grabbing me and yanking me to look out at the sea. Cletus was almost the size of a Goliath and had the strength to match, despite just being an ordinary human. He always had his head shaved, low in a militant style, and an almost permanent 5 o'clock shadow, and numerous tattoos. It was hard to believe he was just 2 years my senior. Using his massive strength, he jerked me to look out at the cresting suns. It was clear he wasn't just admiring the beautiful sunrise, but rather a large, full-rigged ship had come barreling past the peninsula into the bay. Its masts were larger than any I'd ever seen before. Like a massive sun-bleached kite, the wind brought the sails in. The ship looked worn with sea travel, but you could tell every inch of it had been very well taken care of. The ship, larger than any vessel I'd ever seen, the king's or foreign, was made of large, massive oak planks, as if cut down from the oldest trees in the world. It had at least 4 layers below the deck of the ship, and that's just from what I could make out from the cannon mounts. As the massive ship drew closer, I could see its figurehead, a giant, well-polished bust of a dragon. It started from a wide base of a neck and formed into an expertly carved likeness of a dragon about to breathe fire. The ship, before it pulled into harbor, started to turn, and etched ornately in the dark oak paneling of the ship was the dazzling pearl. Soon the ship stopped moving, starboard cannons facing the pier. Everyone, including me, dangling there in Cletus's arms, watched with beaded anticipation. But the silence only lasted for a fraction of a second. It seems the name the Dazzling Pearl was the name of a very notorious pirate ship. A sizable portion of the merchants and dock workers were hurriedly loading up merchandise below decks or rushing to get them on carts to take into the city. The few city officials around seemed to have run off, probably to get someone with actual merit. Meanwhile, I cupped my hands, and I saw a few figures dangling down the banisters and loading up some life rafts below. Even at this distance, though, I could tell they weren't nearly filling up the small vessels. Most of the crew seemed to be staying at the top of the ship. And even at this distance, I could see the fabled Captain Silverfang, a glistening silver dot standing at the front of the crowd, bigger and brighter than the rest. The life rafts arrived at port, but before that it seemed that more than half the port disappeared. I was slack-jawed at the speed in which everyone vacated. All that seemed to be left standing around were me, Cletus, and about 20 or 30 other miscreants. I don't want to say a pirate or a thug has a look, because you're going to picture trench coats, eye patches, and peg legs. But the people who were standing around certainly didn't look like the type of folks you'd want to ask for a smoke in the middle of the night. Hell, I'm pretty sure one of the folks who didn't get picked had his jaw sliced open just the week before from a broken bottle in a bar brawl. I should know. I started it. Now, the ones who arrived off the Dazzling Pearl looked like real pirates. Yes, the ones you were imagining first. Just less missing limbs and more fancy hats. The leader of the group, who I'd later come to know as Zeed, the ship's first mate, was a large tropical-plumed Arakocra. He flew off from the lifeboats when they were about 30 feet from shore, in a flourishing display with a scimitar.
"The captain's ship needs a few extra ship hands for a mission. If you don't know of the Dazzling Pearl, nor Captain Silverfang, then I suggest you leave now."
By this time, the life rafts had docked, but no one was getting out. They just sat there, oars anchored into the sand, and stared out at us menacingly. The Arakocra went on.
"We are the most preeminent pirates in all of the 13 seas. We have been to lands you all dream of. I see a few of you have not run away, feathers tucked between your legs. Do you think you are fit to sail the seas with us? Let's put you to the test. See that longship there?"
And he pointed a long talon to a medium-sized merchant vessel that was all but abandoned, save a few heads ducking below portholes.
"They're known as the Blood Keepers, and have recently upset our captain. Luckily for you, but unluckily for them, this is the perfect test for a new crew. Take that ship over, throw any crates you find out into the sea, and come meet us 25 kilometers out west. Oh, and one important thing. No killing except the captain. Take the ship over and come meet us. If our captain is satisfied with your work, he'll let you ride with us. If he's not, then you'll be swimming back to shore."
With that, he flew up high into the air. Two or three of the people who came in the life rafts jumped out and led the charge onto the enemy ship. The others in the life rafts tossed weapons to our crowd and shouted, cheering us onward. I think the rush of adrenaline blinded me, because almost like a picture scroll, the next 20 minutes just flashed right by. One moment I was picking up a scimitar off the docks, the next Cletus was throwing me onto the deck of the ship. A bashing of a jaw, the screams of men, and the sounds of crates sinking. In no time we had the ship taken over, and gained a few bruises to prove it. Most of their crew abandoned the ship. A few actually switched sides. And the captain, a rather tall and broad half-orc that they called Finn, decided to jump ship. A rather cowardly thing to do, but I can't blame him. Some things aren't worth losing your life over. I never got the full details about Captain Finn, but apparently he'd been running from Captain Silverfang for a while after stealing 30,000 gold pieces worth of treasure. Rumor was he was a changeling, hopping around from ship to ship and trying to make a pirate's fortune under the name of a few different aliases. Captain Finn, who worked with the Blood Keepers, according to Silverfang, was the same Vincent Urghole who stole his treasure, and the same Jeffrey Bale wanted by the Federale of the Seas. This man had a large bounty on his head, attached or separated. Not large enough for Captain Silverfang to care too much at the time. We stole his ship, took it out to Captain Silverfang, and all of us had officially become ranking members among the Dazzling Pearl. Granted, we were the absolute lowest ranking members, and it actually turned out we were only needed and tasked with keeping the ship clean. I actually only ever got to talk directly to Captain Silverfang 3 times.
Once, when we met from offboarding Finn's ship to lay down the laws of the ship. The second time was while I was with Cletus, and admittedly, he only wanted extra hands carrying crates of cannonballs down to the bilge where we slept. And the third time was the night we got attacked by that thing you asked about. Captain Silverfang, to this day, is the largest dragonborn I've met. Standing almost 8 feet tall, he's a handsomely dressed pirate. Yes, that one. Even with the eye patch. He didn't have a peg leg, but he did have a prosthetic arm. Something fancy and intricately designed to almost look like a real claw made of silver. But not just a lump of metal molded from a cast like I've seen around here. No, this was a moving and working piece of silver. Of course, no one on the boat dared ask him how or where he got it, so countless rumors arose. Bitten off by a kraken, scorched off by a beholder, ripped off by a Balgora. Take your pick. The most I knew about his personality was that he was a graciously generous captain. We even got a cut, and a decent one at that, for just staying on the ship when they pillaged tombs or stole from monsters. It was actually on such occasion that we were attacked by that crimson-winged she-devil. I think you called her Aaron, yes? But I don't think that was her name, so you might have the wrong gal. I believe Captain said her name was Asharis, Breaker of Chains, or something like that. Either way, while the crew was offshore at Troll Skull Island, delving into the abandoned mines, we were having a jaunty time. We spent most of our time cleaning. If not, we wouldn't get our share of the find. However, there was still plenty of time for drinking and playing cards. And it was at such a time, 3 silver up on Cletus, when I heard the sound of a blast, followed by the ripping of fabric. It sounded as if someone had shot a cannonball up on the deck of the ship. Conveniently enough, just where we happened to be playing. It startled Cletus, and he, along with the cards, went flying across the deck of the ship. There was still a bit of ringing in my ears, so I couldn't rely on the sound too clearly. The few others who were up on the deck at the time started running around, shouting and pointing. Some ran away, some to me, but in one instance, the boat had become alive. I was excited, because in that heartbeat, I thought we had a real pirate fight on our hands, and that the sound I heard had to be that of an enemy cannon. I started looking around for the enemy ship, but the waters were completely still. The only thing out there was the setting suns and a few birds flying to the coast. The ringing started to die down and was quickly replaced with the running of boots and the sounds of 20 or so men crowding towards the front of the ship. And then, the weirdest thing happened. Like a snowflake, a thin, long green feather gently floated down onto my face. At first I didn't know what to think of it, but it made me instinctively look up. And there, about 200 feet above the deck, the ship, was Zeed, the first hand. Currently being strangled by this winged humanoid. It was getting dark, but I could make out that they were both flapping their wings to stay aloft, one an emerald frantic blur, the other a calm crimson beat. Now Zeed is an Aarakocra. Him being up there made sense. But she didn't. She floated there stoically with one arm outstretched, squeezing the life out of him. She was covered head to toe in a black armor, and from here I could see large black horns protruding from her helm. Behind her was what I could only describe as a tear in reality itself. The visual world of our sky had a long, jagged rip in it about 5 feet wide. At the edges, it looked like our world was pouring into the other one. And though it was high up in the air, I swear through the rip I saw flames and shadows trying to claw their way into our reality. I couldn't stare at the rift too long, because she then mentally assaulted all of us on the deck of the ship. She shouted at us down below, and with each billowing shout you could feel the power and ferocity in her voice, both resonating all around my skull and spilling from her lips. But the language sounded foreign to my ears, so much harsher and stricter, as if each syllable was being barked at us. When none of us on the deck of the ship responded, aside from a few desperate looks between us,
she pulled out a long, gleaming piece of metal. And once again, we were all asked a question that none of us knew how to answer. And seemingly unhappy with the lack of response, the large longsword she was holding swung through the air in front of her with blinding speed. There was a puff of feathers and a loud squawk. An uproar started at the front of the ship, but I was a bit preoccupied to join their shouts of defiance. With a loud crunch, Zeed came crashing down to the ground. His entire right wing had been removed and replaced with a bloody, wiggling stump jutting out of his back. I rolled him over and blood was trickling out of his beak, turning his breast from a tropical green to a matted maroon. His throat had been crushed, but through strained words, he coughed out a final command to me. He told me to grab his necklace, which was clutched tightly in his talons, and then to call for Captain Silverfang using a command word. Through the shouts and pleas of men and the clanging of swords, I heard off in the distance what sounded like a bolt of lightning striking a tree. Then the very next moment, Captain Silverfang was standing on the deck of the ship, a cloud of smoke fading away from him. I saw his cold blue eyes assess the scene. Zeed lay there barely breathing in front of me, an entire wing cut off and cast into the sea. The winged monster had flown down to the ship and was clashing blows with the men. It was a sad fight, though. The creature, now up close, looked like a beautiful woman kissed by the moonlight. Her black armor was gleaming with the blood of my friends. Even though her wings easily stretched a span of 10 to 12 feet, she tucked and flung them effortlessly through the crowd. If a sailor even came close to blows with her, she would parry it as if it were nothing. She was absolutely untouchable, cutting down man after man, cursing us in her unintelligible speech. Then, Captain Silverfang called out to the monster, yelling at her with the same devilish tongue. I don't think anyone but the monster caught what he said, but it was clear that he was angry. With each rising syllable, his voice became filled with malice and hate until he was practically growling. Whatever the speech was, though, he decided to end it in common. "Step aside, lads. I've got a bitch to send back to hell." He then raised his mechanical finger and pointed at the monster. A plume of smoke started funneling around her, completely obscuring her from view. Sailors ran as the smoke billowed sorcelessly from her, and quickly the salty sea air was replaced by the acrid, overwhelming stench of brimstone and sulfur. It was faint on the air before, but now it stung at my eyes and throat, and I wasn't even anywhere near the blast. The men closest to her ran out of the cloud, vomiting and clutching their noses. The captain reached in his pocket and tossed me a small vial. "You and Cletus take him to my quarters. Give that to him and wash his wounds. Don't open the door for absolutely anyone, unless it's me." He said all this stern-faced while looking forward at the cloud of smoke. He shouted once again to the young deckhands, "I can buy us a little bit of time. Run to safety. You've done well protecting the pearl." He raised his scimitar, which was now glowing slightly as if heated from the coals of a forge, and ran towards the cloud. The cloud started to disperse, though. For within, the monster was flapping her wings profusely, dispelling the area around her, seemingly unaffected at all by the poisonous plume. She flew, rushing at the captain. Their swords met with a bright clash of steel, and it seemed that the captain was about to lose his ground, but his eyes flared with intensity as he opened his mouth, and he began bathing the monster in a blast of ice and wind. All the while, his scimitar pressed against her longsword was glowing brighter from a sourceless heat. As quickly as ice shards pierced her skin, they were melting away. The captain struck quickly in 5 rapid swings, but all of them missed, sinking into the floorboards below the monster. At this point, Cletus and I already had Zeed up on his shoulders and was starting to run towards the captain's quarters, so everything else I only saw in glances as I fled. I looked back, and it seemed the scorch marks the captain made were on fire below the monster. She was smiling, I think even laughing, at the captain. But I saw him smirking too. A plume of fire surrounded the monster as the captain jumped back. A large cylinder of fire and smoke sprouted from where she stood like a beacon. Then, as quickly as the fire exploded, the plume of fire vanished, leaving behind a bit of ash. I heard the captain's shouts as we ran away, warning the rest of the men on the deck that she'd be coming back. That was the last time I saw that harpy, a Charis or Aranyes or whatever you called her. Cletus and I did as we were told, and stayed locked up in the captain's quarters, tending to our first mate's wounds. Neither of us were experts in the field by no means, so besides the vial of milky white liquid we gave him, we only knew to wash his wounds with the water and soap the captain had in his personal storage. It was enough to keep him alive until help came, which was just a mere 5 minutes later. A disheveled and bloodied Captain Silverfang came bursting into the room, followed by a young half-elven woman who I'd seen always in close company with the captain, along with the ship's cleric, Esteban. A well-dressed, thin human who worshipped the god of coin, Joaquin. A fitting god for a privateer, but at this time he asked for no gold. Lily, they called her commonly, had thrown herself on top of Zeed, crying as she ran her fingers above his wounds. We were thanked profusely, but alas, kicked out of the room as the priest began working on him. Like many stories on the boat, what happened quickly began to spread to anyone and everyone who'd listen, which was actually everyone. Everywhere you turned, someone was telling the story of how the captain, mostly alone, scared the monster away after plucking its wings clean. The crew said by the time they showed up, she had run back into that weird portal she came through. No one knows why or how she got here, though.
End of story. Well, I chose this one only because it mentioned the Bloodkeepers at the beginning. I had no idea before this week what an Aranyes even was, honestly, but luckily we have some notes from Nico's previous research to go off of. Physiology. So, first, these creatures are fiends from hell, but unlike many of their fiendish relatives, they strike an uncanny appearance to that of their celestial counterparts, the angels. The Aranyes is humanoid in shape and can take the form of a man or woman, but most seem to prefer being female. They have large wings similar to that of a planetar, but instead of a peaceful white, they are a deep blood red. And while they look far more human and beautiful than most other fiends, they are still corrupted and shaped by the nine hells. Sent out from whichever realm they reside in, they will do their master's bidding and keep order in whatever layer of hell they reside. Weaknesses and resistances. Let's cover immunities first. The creature is completely immune to fire and poison. It's odd, though, because it seemed that our Captain Silverfang here was aware of that. When I first read this story, I thought he casted immolation, like my old friend Charles. But now I realize it reads like a teleportation spell. Either way, even mundane attacks from a non-magical weapon will virtually do nothing against a fiendish creature. Attacks and abilities. Alongside its innate arcane resistances, allowing it to shrug off lower-powered charms, these creatures are exceptional marksmen, or swordsmen, and, well, pretty much are elite warriors with any weapon. But their lethal levels of skill with the blade aren't what makes an attack by these creatures dangerous. One of their devilish gifts is the ability to cause poison and rot to any wound they inflict with their weapons. Nico seems to have been a bit happy at that discovery, noting that none of the weapons themselves were poisonous, but that each strike inflicted by the Aranyes they studied had caused poison to enter the body of its victim, despite the blade being sterile. But aside from that, they aren't nearly as gifted with otherworldly abilities like most other fiends. They're just a superior, flying, battle strategist from another dimension who will use that knowledge to kill and strike you down.
All
Okay, like I mentioned, I chose this one because I wanted to do some research on the Bloodkeepers. However, this was the only thing I could find, and it didn't actually mention anything. It seems that if I want more information about this changeling, I'll need someone to go and speak to this Captain Silverfang or Peter themselves. Unfortunately, Daisy and Luna are still busy organizing artifact storage, and Cadwin left for his own adventure and research. It's evident if I want to go down this path, I'll probably be pursuing it on my own. It'll take a while to coordinate because I'm falling behind here. I guess that's my fault for trying to find very specific stories. Maybe I'll just pick one at random for next week. No gods or blood keepers. Just some good old fun stories about monsters, eh?
Thank you so much for listening. If you enjoyed today's episode, please share it with your friends and family, or leave us a review on Apple Podcasts. Follow us on Twitter at monstersof_ for all news and teasers for upcoming episodes. Today's story was inspired by a fan. They requested a story about this monster on Twitter, and it happened to fit the bill for a certain fiendish warlock pirate that roams the seas of my world. Join me next week as we experience the terrifying heights the Rock can take us. Thank you for listening. Until next time.